Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation, Kaiser Permanente, and the California Healthcare Foundation, supporting ideas and innovations to improve healthcare for all Californians. On the web at chcf.org.
This is Valley Edition, FM 89's weekly look at the issues that matter to the residents of the San Joaquin Valley.
Hello, I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. On this week's program, a controversial needle exchange program no longer has the support of Fresno County supervisors. We will examine the impact. And the Central Valley's failure to educate its workforce is making an already bad unemployment problem worse. We will talk to those searching for solutions. Plus, entertainment in the Central Valley. First, it is a tough question. Do needle exchanges enable drug users, or do clean needles from these programs ultimately save people from HIV? Fresno County supervisors dropped their support for a local needle exchange, making the program illegal. The fight is making national headlines. Valley Public Radio correspondent Shelley Bronco has this report.
One more.
Keep them, 35.
Volunteers are counting piles of used needles dumped out of plastic bags. It's a hot Saturday afternoon on a secluded street in North Fresno, and people are lining up under a shade tent to get rid of their dirty syringes. In return, they're getting an equal number of clean needles from the volunteers at the Fresno Needle Exchange Program. The first person in line is a woman in her late 40s who prefers to be called Toby. She's a heroin user who's been coming to the exchange for 10 years. She's seen other drug users trading their old needles on the streets.
They sell three needles for a dollar. And if needle exchange was near, all kinds of people probably have AIDS right now. It saved a lot of the AIDS outbreak.
Needle exchanges for drug users are meant to reduce the spread of HIV and other communicable diseases. These exchanges are common in other areas of the state, but Fresno's program is the only one of its kind in the Valley. And according to studies, Fresno has one of the highest rates of injection drug use in the nation. But now Fresno's needle exchange is illegal. That's because the County Board of Supervisors withdrew its support for the program late last month. The supervisors dropped a plan that would have given the exchange a permanent location in a facility. Supervisor Phil Larson was one of the three who voted against the exchange.
Well, because I feel it's an enabling process for someone to stay on drugs longer, not to get them off.
Dallas Blanchard believes the opposite. He's the director of the needle exchange, and he says the program will continue despite the board's decision.
Yeah, I see the needle exchange as enabling people to get into treatment. You know, we act as a bridge to treatment, and 20 years of research has proven that it works.
The mobile needle exchange has been around for 17 years, supported by grants and fundraisers. Volunteers don't just hand out needles to the 150 clients who drop by each Saturday. They offer referrals to drug treatment programs and social services. Medical volunteers also show up each week to provide checkups in a mobile clinic.
She's a 47-year-old Caucasian female who is presenting with this complaint. Right arm's infected.
Dr. Mark Lasher is treating Toby inside the mobile clinic, a green and yellow converted school bus. Okay, so Toby's injection sites are infected.
How much heroin are you still using a day?
That's only a nickel, maybe a dime.
A nickel, a dime a day?
A nickel, a dime.
And how much methadone are you
25
on?
25 milligrams.
Okay, so when you get into clinic on Monday...
Dr. Lasher is the director of the Fresno Free Medical Clinic, part of the needle exchange. He says people who claim the exchange is enabling addicts don't understand the disease of addiction.
The dragon of addiction is much stronger than what seems to be rational. That's not the issue. What we're trying to do is prevent the spread of infection, and so that when people go through this whole process of their disease and they start getting, you know, to, you know, have a much better lifestyle, hopefully they're not suffering from some severe, you know, killers, you know, like HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C.
In a way, the county still partners with the needle exchange. The Fresno County Department of Public Health offers HIV and hepatitis C tests once a month at the exchange site. Gina Adams works on communicable disease issues for the department.
In the public health arena, needle exchange is seen as a primary
prevention method. It's harm reduction. When you know that someone is still going to engage in a high-risk behavior, anything that any kind of education or paraphernalia that we can offer to reduce risk is important.
Two bills in the state legislature would give a boost to needle exchanges. One would allow doctors to provide syringes without a prescription. The other bill would support needle exchanges when there is a serious public health risk. Dr. John Zweifler of UC San Francisco's Fresno campus says the medical community is generally supportive of needle exchanges. He's worked with the clinic at the needle exchange, and he's grateful, in a sense, for the Board of Supervisors' decision.
Really, there's been no impact whatsoever of the deauthorization. The only, I would say, positive benefit is that we are now having a discussion of what, to me, is a very clear and logical step that we should be taking, and we should actually be spreading to other communities within Fresno County and throughout our state.
In the meantime, addicts like Toby will continue to line up for help on Saturday afternoons.
And Dr. Lasher, like I said, he saved my life two times. If Dr. Lasher wasn't here, I'd be dead. He saved my life because I had a real bad infection, you know, diabetes infection in my hip. And he saved me. He lanced it and saved my life. So I thank God for Dr. Lasher.
I'm Shelley Bronco.
And Shelley Bronco joins us now. Shelley, who visits these exchanges? By the way, very good report.
Thank you. Yes, I did. As you know, I visited this exchange, and people from all walks of life were at this needle exchange and getting treatment. But what Dallas Blanchard, who's the director of the program, what he said is that he's seeing a lot more young users under 25 coming in the past 3 to 4 years. They're moving on from prescription drugs to heroin.
So a lot of people might think, oh, these are just street people or something like that. But as you said, these are people from all walks of life.
People driving up in nice cars, people in nice clothes, along with the people who seem to be living on the street.
Okay. What's next for the exchange?
They're going to continue, and they're actively supporting the legislation currently going through the state assembly and Senate. And these activists have been arrested in the past, but they've succeeded in winning their cases. So they're not concerned about, I guess, some of the consequences that have happened in the past.
Okay. Thanks so much, Shelley,
Thank
for
you.
That report. And we have Pavon from Bakersfield is on the line. Pavon?
Hi, I'm here.
Yes.
And yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
For the record, I'm in favor of this program. And basically, the argument can be made from both lines of thinking. You know, you've got these conservative, fiscal conservative, thinking-minded people, and even the libertarian people who want to do with the program. You know, if you look at it from a holistic standpoint, the person using the drugs is doing it probably on his own time. And for a fiscal conservative who only thinks in nickels and dimes and wants to balance the budget or whatever the economic reason is, they're doing the drugs on their own money. And in the end, if they contract HIV or hepatitis C, it's more expensive for the society to deal with the bigger problem than with the drug use problem. Okay, so that's the conservative argument. The libertarian argument is, if you're so pro-life or if you believe in redemption for a person whose mind is broken by drug use, it makes sense for you to give them at least a free needle so you can bridge that trust with them and give them a path to redemption, to normal life. So I think this argument can be made from both sides in favor of continuing the program. But I think on a broader sense, what's going on is the vitriolic environment in which people are arguing, it's gotten so bad that I think they can't even make rational sense. And that's a sorry state of affairs. I'm wondering if there was a needle exchange program, is there an idea exchange program where they can in a civilized way, sit down and talk?
Do you all have an exchange program in Bakersfield?
I do not know. I was just listening to it on the radio, and it just caught my attention. But I think overall, I think the environment has gotten so bad that in a culture where you have these gladiator-minded people who are watching arm and fist in the UFC as a form of entertainment, to them, I think the human life doesn't mean much these days.
Okay.
So they say, in the end, just save money.
Okay. Where we can. Payvon, we thank you so much for calling in, and we appreciate your comments.
Yeah, thank you.
Also joining us is Michael Alsop. He is the clinic manager of Aegis Medical Systems. What do you think about, what the caller had to say? Because, their whole case is that you are enabling people to continue this behavior. Right.
Well, I thank you for the caller's comments. He's right on key. It's a needed venue in every county in California. Especially Fresno. It's saving lives. It's preventing the spread of HIV and many other different types of diseases. But just as Dr. Lasher spoke of earlier, and his partner in the needle exchange program, it's also allows individuals that once they do get into treatment and they get their lives in order, they're not dealing with the HIV and the hepatitis and other things down the road.
Well, how will the supervisor's decision mean anything to your clinic?
It's really not Aegis Medical Systems that it means something to. It's actually our county, our city, our town is what it's going to mean something to. And I think they really need to take heed of that because it is a health issue that needs to be really looked at really closely. The needle exchange program has been operating for 15 years. It will continue to operate.
Well, I interviewed Supervisor Judy Case, and, she asked the question, who benefits from passing out the needles? Is it the person who might get robbed by an addict, to feed their habit, or someone else? How do you answer that question?
Well, let's take a look at this. Let's talk about the average person, a police officer who searches somebody and they have dirty needles in their pocket and they get stuck. Let's talk about a nurse in an emergency room who they have to cut the clothing off of someone who's in an accident and they get stuck. Let's talk about the individual that's recycling plastic out of trash cans. Let's talk about schoolyards. Let's talk about parks. That's in the back many, many, many years ago, that's where the needles were discarded. And now we have needle exchange programs, which have really, really significantly reduced the spread of HIV and other diseases.
Well, for our listeners, I'd like to know what you think. Do you think that the needle exchange programs enable addicts to continue their behavior? You can call us at 800-224-8989 or 275-8989 or online at kvpr.org. In the meantime, let's listen to our interview with Supervisor Judy Case and see what she says about what went into her decision on this issue.
What went into your decision when it came to the needle exchange program to not make it legal?
The needle exchange and the argument for risk reduction, there are a lot of pros and cons on both sides. In particular, the pro is that for people, loved ones of someone who's drug addicted and using injection drugs, is that they won't be exposed to the diseases that are transmitted through exposure to blood, nor will the person who's injecting the drugs. On the flip side of that is that it really is an enabling behavior on the part of government. And by saying enabling is doing something for someone that they could do for themselves or should do for themselves. So enabling allows the drug seeker to be able to continue in that behavior. So you look at weighing what are the benefits and the risks. Who's going to benefit by passing out clean needles to people who are going to go out and get drugs without prescription? To be able to take them on a recreational basis. And it's the enabling piece that's very concerning, is that we would go ahead and give them the tools to continue that behavior. And again, our society's decided that whether it's being an alcoholic, an alcohol addiction, or whether it's a drug addiction, using drugs for recreational purposes, basically, I don't think that people can lead a productive life when they're engaging in those behaviors. And by adding to give them the needles that they're seeking. That's just allowing them to continue in that path and not be productive citizens. And then you also have to ask, where are they getting these drugs if they're not getting them by prescription, and how are they paying for them? When we first heard this issue, which was back in 2008, Sheriff Mims gave testimony that she did not support a needle exchange because of all the other criminal activity that typically gets people who are drug addicted may engage in, particularly stealing to be able to get money to afford a habit. So, you know, it's not an easy black and white situation in terms of making the decision. There are those you would like to not get exposed to diseases based on living with or being a close friend of a drug-addicted individual. But I think it just promotes their continued use of drugs for recreational purposes.
What about the argument that for a drug-addicted person, really doesn't matter if they have a clean needle or not, they are going to use anyway. And at least this way, you can prevent perhaps maybe the spread of an illness or disease.
And that is true. Actually, needles can be cleaned using simple household bleach. Hepatitis C is one element that doesn't get cleaned, doesn't get destroyed by the bleach. But hepatitis C is one of those diseases to be concerned about. But again, it's enabling the person to continue the behavior they have. What Fresno County does do is spend millions of dollars in drug treatment and alcohol treatment programs, both for the addicted and also to assist their family to understand their part and helping somebody to continue these addictive behaviors. And honestly, when somebody wants to change their ways, I think it's really important to have programs available to them so they can get the care and they can get the guidance that they need. And sometimes they need detoxification so they can physically get the drug out of their system and do it safely. So I think that's really the better way of going, is to have the programs available to help people get rid of the addiction as opposed to giving them the tools so they can continue the addiction.
There have been people who've said, you know, well, Fresno County is just out of step with this program, with other regions who do or have legalized needle exchange.
Basically, I went in research to see if there had been any big changes since 2008, and this would mean Fresno County would be the only county in the Central Valley that had a needle exchange program. Now, I do understand one operates, and that's really a law enforcement issue. It's in the city of Fresno, but it's still, by federal law, illegal to possess needles without a prescription. And in our Central Valley, none of the other counties have really decided that needle exchange is the way to treat addiction. They have all gone the way of having programs available to assist people to get out of their addiction. So then the question is, if Fresno is the only needle exchange location, will that in fact draw people to Fresno who are drug addicts that want to find a place to get free needles?
As a supervisor, what kind of repercussions have you all faced for making this choice?
You know, there are certainly advocates who want to see needle exchange as a part of the whole array of services provided to drug addiction. That's public health professionals. You also have people that are healthcare professionals, I think, that would have the same argument about enabling people and giving them the tools to continue in something that's very unhealthy for them. Now, remember, when somebody is using needles to inject drugs, they can do great harm to themselves and others. Suppose they were to give themselves too much medication, they can die from an overdose. Suppose they give themselves enough to be high, they get in a car and they get on the roads and they're an impaired driver, they can cause accidents. So it's not a healthy behavior. I know the advocates for this think it would reduce the opportunity for both the addict and anybody close to them to not contract, whether it's HIV or hepatitis C, the blood-borne illnesses that are out there. But that would be weighed against somebody continuing in a drug-addicted behavior that has its own negative consequences. It's not a black and white subject. There's arguments on both sides, but ultimately my decision has really weighed in on we're enabling somebody to continue a very negative behavior.
And so do you think by saying no, they might change their behavior?
The addict has to decide that they're willing to accept help. And we're going to be there with our programs, with every possible way we can assist them to change that direction, to recover from addiction, to detoxify if necessary, and also giving supportive services to help them with the issues that took them down the path of addiction.
And we are back. Mr. Alsop, I'd like to ask you, we'll discuss that interview, but you know what she's saying? Are other programs the way to go instead of needle exchange?
Well, you know, Juanita, dollars are spent on addiction, but dollars are also spent on prevention. Fresno County has a prevention department within the Department of Alcohol and Drugs, so within the Substance Abuse Division. And also, the needle exchange program is not treating addiction. It's preventing the spread of diseases, and it serves as a portal for these people to get into treatment. There's a referral system there. They're referred to whatever their zip code is. They're referred to the clinic closest to them for treatment. So it's they're not, in essence, the needle exchange program does not treat addiction. It is prevention for the spread of diseases.
And one of the other points that was brought up here is the idea that since it is the city of Fresno has a program, that it might attract people from other areas.
For the exchange?
Yes.
Well, I think that would be fantastic because those people would also find treatment.
Okay.
Through the prevention and through the help that Dr. Lasher and his team provides. I mean, it's a whole scope of medical services. It's prevention in regards to the diseases that they may contract. And it also, as I said, allows as a portal for them to get into treatment. We've seen many, many, many individuals come from the needle exchange program to our program for treatment.
And that's your goal?
My goal is to get as many people into treatment as we can. Yes, get them stable and get them back on track.
Okay. We will be back in just a moment. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition. You're listening to a rebroadcast of Valley Edition. Welcome back. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and this is Valley Edition. A recent study by the Brookings Institute revealed what many in the Central Valley already know, that the number of educated, skilled workers in Fresno County is too low. And now, with the recession and ongoing job crisis, the Central Valley is experiencing the consequences for failing to educate its workforce. This is what the Brookings study revealed. Fresno, Bakersfield, and several other Central Valley cities ranked among the nation's top 10 cities for shortages of educated workers. It's called an education gap.
So what that means is that the average worker in those metropolitan areas had less education than required by the average job.
According to this study, close to 25% of the jobs in the Fresno area require a college degree, yet only about 20% of the workforce has one. The lack of educated workers has resulted in higher unemployment rates for the Central Valley. Fresno County's rate was 16% for August. Bakersfield's rate stood at 14%. And those numbers are likely to remain high because, according to Rothwell, since the recession, the trend has shifted to a more educated worker in the workforce because so many jobs were lost in sectors requiring less education, like construction and manufacturing.
Meanwhile, there's been growth in some sectors of the economy where education is relatively more important, such as the healthcare industry and the educational and professional services industries.
Rothwell says the education gap is not new and has plagued many cities even before the recession. He says the Central Valley's economy is part of the reason.
It's an economy built on low-paying jobs based in agriculture and food manufacturing, increasing the demand for low-skilled workers. Now that the job sectors are shifting to professions requiring a higher skilled and better educated workforce, the Central Valley is being left behind.
Well, insofar as the region has neglected educational attainment, and I'm in no position to judge one way or another, then certainly it's hampered its economic performance and its ability to weather this recession.
Now, joining me to discuss this issue is Luis Santana, Executive Director, Reading and Beyond, and Pam Lassiter with the Fresno Regional Workforce Investment Board. First of all, welcome to both of you. But, you know, this is not a new issue. I think both of you will agree. We have been discussing low education levels, the lack of good jobs for years. We could probably go back 20 years, and we have not made much progress. Each of you, if you could take a look at, you know, why you think we haven't made any headway perhaps up until this point.
Oh, well, thank you, Juanita, so much for having Luis and I this morning. With the Workforce Investment Board, I think some of the main reasons that we haven't made the progress we wanted is our inability to diversify our economy specifically. We have, like, for too long relied specifically on, you know, with 30% of the jobs being based on agriculture, that gives us very limited opportunities to grow higher-paying, higher-demand jobs, I think, in the Valley. So I think our focus needs to be on what we can do to help our businesses grow and to retain the jobs that we have and grow those jobs and industries here in the Valley and then diversify more and bring in other technology. One of the things the board has been working on, I think you might be aware of, is the opportunity for high-speed rail. The high-speed rail alone would bring in tens and tens of thousands of jobs immediately. And then, of course, that would take care of a lot of the current economic conditions that I think we're facing.
Well, will we have workers for those jobs?
Oh, yes, ma'am. I think today, if you look, we estimate there's anywhere from 80 to 100,000 unemployed people in the Valley, and many of those people have been dislocated from the construction industry, and they do have transferable skills because a significant portion of those jobs will be construction jobs for the first 10 to 15 years. You know, have to build the thing. So I do believe we have a base, a good strong base to provide those jobs for many of our Fresno residents.
Okay. And Luis, you from the education standpoint, you know, we've been struggling with high dropout rates for a long time. There have been a number of initiatives trying to address it.
Juanita, thanks again for inviting us. I want you to take from where Pam was mentioning about the need for diversified economy. The reality is we can try to diversify, but until we address the education issue, there's no much can be done. This issue has been around for quite a while. If you look back, I have been in this county for 20 years, and this issue has been around for 20 years. I think we need to start to ask ourselves is what we are doing, it is not working, and stop to do that, and start to looking for things that are more effective to be able to address the issue. Education is a major problem why we can't diversify our economy. And again, there is some jobs available, but there's no people to qualify for that. So that's where the education plays a major role in this process.
Why is it that we have so many young people who don't move on to higher education, whether it's high school, junior college, or even a training program?
Juanita, I think my interpretation, actually not just my interpretation, we have enough studies and enough data we can talk about this, is, look, if the child moves from elementary to junior high without any skills they should have had built during that time and go to the junior high to high school and then finally to college, this person will not have the skills to. And most of them never arrive to college education because they don't have what takes. Something was missed in the process for them. So that's the main issue. If we don't look what we are doing with education, what type of education we're providing to our students, this will be affecting us. That's why the numbers of dropout. Look, if I ask if you to do something you are not doing well, you figure out ways to drop out too.
Right.
Well, Juanita, I think what we've seen, and especially in the last 3 years, is significant numbers of more people are pursuing higher education. Adults coming in that don't even have high school diplomas are pursuing their GEDs and returning to post-secondary. And I think that has a lot to do with their inability to get jobs. So there are a lot of focused projects that are being undertaken right now to truly assist people in connecting them to the education system. Just a point in matter, Fresno City and other community colleges, they're over capacity for what the demand is now. So you have the need and the desire there. I think there's a realization that they can't get jobs. So from a trying to look forward, people are really now going outside of what the traditional way have been fearful about. You know, maybe they didn't have the confidence or the ability to get education, but now they're pursuing it. So I think a bigger issue is also how do we build the capacity to provide training for our people?
Exactly. No, it's just like you said. We do have more young people, not only young people, but people going back into the education system in such numbers that we cannot handle them. So at the same time, when you have this need, we're dealing with budget cuts that are cutting the programs that we so desperately need to get these people ready to be in the workforce.
And again, there's some initiatives. There was the Smart Cities, Smart Communities. The administration targeted Fresno as one of six cities nationally to have federal agencies come and live with us and see what we could do to do better planning and leverage resources better. And that's just starting. I think you might have heard that the mayor has a Learn to Earn initiative where she's trying to work with our public and private education institutions to build capacity to provide that opportunity for people when they need to access, you know, just the basic skills and then hopefully a higher level. But we do have jobs. I will tell Luis and yourself that any one time, you know, I can see about 2,500 to 3,000 jobs in like a 90-day period. And most of them do require some kind of certificate or bachelor's, master's degree. A significant number of the jobs, of course, are in healthcare. I think one of the things that we do need to do a better job, excuse me, is at really looking at what the jobs are, ensuring that training is there for those jobs, because that is one of the gaps that we continue to face, we've always faced, with the complexity of getting programs, especially in healthcare training programs, up and running, the cost and the timeliness of that. So those are the kind of things we're trying to target with the federal administration to say, can you help us eliminate some of those barriers to try and get those programs up when we need them? Because there are jobs today, thousands of jobs that are unfilled because there aren't qualified people there.
Juanita, I think I agree with Pam. There's no doubt about that. But I want to go back to the question, for example, a lot of adults today are seeking more education. The question is, a lot of those who are going to junior college right now, in many cases, they are, even though they have a high school diploma or they may they have a high school graduated, they are taking classes should have been offered for them in high school. So that means you are looking for a major gap. So this person will take way much longer to be able to qualify, to have the skills, to be able to build skills, technical skills they may need to acquire later on to be professional in different areas, to have a career. But there's a basic skills we need to make sure follow the child throughout the process of education. And that's not happening right now.
No, you're right, and it has been well documented. I understand you're working towards something like that.
Reading Beyond was established with this understanding. Kids need to have the first skills for them is to be able to read. If you can't read by the third grade, you can't learn. There is the correlation with the two things. So for us, that's important, but it is not the end. We do really look at the situation. It looks also not just the child, but the family. Look, everything is correlated. I think when we divided or isolated one thing from the other, we are risking. So all the things are correlated. So we are looking at the family in holistic approach. When do we work with the child? We work with the parents. But when we work with the parents, we work with the child. So no matter what we are doing, we start looking at the family as unit. if we want to really go beyond. That's what Really and Beyond has been focusing. And also looking for a research-based, evidence-based program. Whatever, whoever is wants to do something out there, we need to move from a good intention to more practical, evidence-based things can help and impact. Good intention, it's important in the process, but it is only one element of it.
Well, you know, you both of you bring up a good point, and I think that's where we are now. And I think the recession probably spurred a lot of this, because we have had a lot of programs, but they may not have been focused in the right way. And that became really evident when we started losing jobs.
It is true. It is true. You don't. We don't need to go much deeper on the issue, because that's more than documented. We see this in our families. We see this in our community. We see this in the day by day. But all I'm proposing or suggesting is we need to start to figure out ways to align which each one of us do to ensure that we are not just sprinkling good intentions over the families, over the adults, over the kids. And don't go much farther. We need to really do something else has more meaning, have more meat on.
Okay. And one of the things that was pointed out, getting back to the jobs issue, that was pointed out in the Brookings report was that those jobs that were being filled by people with low skills, those are the jobs that we lost. Construction, manufacturing, we lost so many of those jobs. But the increase, as you've said, there are jobs out there, but they're in areas of healthcare and education, jobs where you need either training or degree. And that's the area where we needed the work. We know what needs to be done, but isn't that now going to take some time?
Yes, Juanita, it is. But I think just like with anything else, if you don't start and begin to build the plan, you're never going to reach what you need to get to anyway. I think it's more than a Fresno issue. I think there's a national problem here.
That was pointed out, that it is a national issue.
The issue is supply and demand. It's just like with anything else. I think if you look at it, majority of the people, they don't know what jobs are really out there. You know, the job market is extremely complex. When you talk about all the different sectors, and under the sectors, all the different jobs that are what people could really be good at, what they have a passion to do, there's nowhere that we help educate people, you know, on what those jobs are, what they about me good at, and how do they pursue it. So today, I think one of the things we really need to focus our attention on is understanding the employment market through continued employment studies, and we do that at the Workforce Board. We need to educate our job seekers and students to get their passions, you know, to really start to say, this is the roadmap that you want to pursue. And then we need to make sure we have training programs that are available for those people once they've chosen that career. And today the system doesn't quite work. Everybody's somewhat siloed, and you never know what the next real industry is going to be. I mean, they talk about the green industry. Well, we're still struggling to find where those green jobs are, you know. But when you look at the potential with high-speed rail, with blue tech here in the valley, the blue technology, you know, when you talk about it, water is a major issue regardless in Fresno, because we were a desert at one time. So working with Fresno State and Central Valley Business Incubator, trying to understand and support that industry, you know, what are the barriers, what are the regulatory issues, what are the costs of doing businesses, what's your skilled labor issues, to try and target that industry and help that industry grow. I mean, I think a lot of focus still needs to be on in concept of projects like the Regional Jobs Initiative. You know, because again, we have jobs here. It's very difficult for us to attract employers from other states, as you know, because of just California, the business friendliness climate here in California. But if we can help our current employers grow businesses, I still think that's going to give us a tremendous boost in our job market, as well as looking for opportunities to expand in such areas as high-speed rail and other industries.
And for our listeners, you know, what are some of the things you think we can do to improve our education levels and get more students through high school and college? You can call us at 275-8989 or 800-224-8989 or online at kbpr.org. So as she mentioned, how are we coming together, both the educational components and the work components, to start addressing this?
I think Pam has mentioned something very important about what we need to do. One of the things I recognize is we do all have a limited resources. That's reality. That's something else. We can't forget it. However, my interpretation, the jobs Pam is speaking, is not being filled because there's no candidates. If we figure out ways to educate our population, from kids, all the adults, those jobs will be filled. And older jobs will be coming up, because when you talk about big industries, the reason they are passing us is because we don't have the workforce. Why do you want to come over here if we don't have what you offered, if they have to import the employees to do the work over here? So that's not realistic. So I think the two things need to go head to head, and has to be the silos we have has to be eliminated. We need to be able to talk. Institutions has to be able to talk with organizations and vice versa. And the community at large need to engage. Yes. Things will not change if the community don't engage. Community need to say we need change.
Right. Let's add Nancy to the conversation. She's from Bakersfield. Nancy?
Hi. How are you? I'm just going to make a comment. I'm a 50-year veteran of the public schools in Bakersfield. And all I want to say is that the children need so many people supporting them in the public school. They're hamstrung by the rigors of No Child Left Behind, which is kind of like isn't comprehensive enough to meet their specific emotional needs and their sociological needs, if you know what I'm saying. And so in our particular school district, we have a real lack of personnel in the high schools and in our community, in the schools, that can help the children connect with the community so they can get those needs met and so they can get through school. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They need more counseling support, mm-hmm. much more counseling support. So I'm really an advocate for working in that particular vein to help instill more ideas to connect these children to the community while they're in school, so that they know how to reach those resources so they'll stay in school and stay connected.
Right. Thank you very much, Nancy. We appreciate your call.
You're welcome.
But, you know, that's one of the things that she mentioned. We keep talking about education, but the first time we have a budget crunch, mm-hmm. that is the first thing we want to cut is education.
It is true. This has been a issue for years and years. That's why it goes back to the question, is the community need to stand up and say we can't do this because the consequences will be very big.
Okay. One other thing that I want to point out that was pointed out in this study, and I think that we're seeing it now, and as you mentioned it, that's why we have these jobs that are going unfilled. It produced this issue. And it was highlighted in the Brookings study that there's been a huge loss of mid-level jobs. And maybe that's why we hear so much of this talk about, you know, middle-income people or middle-income workers. What happened, they say, is the decent-paying jobs that involve, like, production or installation or maintenance, transportation, and some office administration. Those professions suffer due to the recession, and those jobs have been replaced by professional services at the higher end of the education spectrum. Then on the other side, areas such as retail sales or hotels have been replaced by low-end people who are on the low end of the education spectrum. And this was the quote of Mr. Rothrell, who was the co-author of that study. Quote, so that has been a real problem for the American middle class. And it is a depressing situation because you have this whole group of folks who have been displaced. And it really is trying to get them back into the workforce. And as you mentioned, there are jobs there. So maybe when we look at training programs, maybe we need to change some of our training programs, because the emphasis has always been on very low skill. Perhaps training people at the mid-level to move into some of these other jobs.
There's been a lot of effort in this area, Juanita, since the beginning of the recession. As you know, there was stimulus money that was provided to the Workforce Investment Board, and we basically contracted out for vocational training programs for those technical, mid-technical level jobs. We trained probably about 3,000 people, and regretfully, though, not all those jobs did come to pass, like with the green, but in healthcare. I think the community colleges, the private institutions here, are really targeting on how you give certificate and associate's degrees for those jobs. You know, they recently received a grant, $20 million grant, the Valley Consortium, to try and bring on more vocational training programs. So there's a lot of effort going into this, but I still think the issue is when you look at just the loss of jobs, it wasn't just the mid-level when you talk about construction manufacturing. Finance here got hurt very badly. If you remember, Shaw used to be title company and banking and real estate. Those aren't there anymore. So the construction industry had a lot more to do with professional jobs. We lost Gottschalk's. We lost Mervyn's. We lost – if you start going down the list of the companies we've lost, the board looked at it in just five sectors between 07 and 10 that we lost 10,000 good-paying jobs.
Wow.
And that
that's
was
a
just
lot for this region any way you look at
just
it.
Just in those five sectors, and that was healthcare, manufacturing, auto, logistics. So some of those were the jobs that didn't require a high school diploma, but a lot of those were the middle jobs too. So I think the loss of jobs in the middle class affects the economy more than people think, because that's your consumers. You know, those are the people that are out there spending, and that's why you start to see other impacts in the retail industry. And, of course, when you impact retail industry, there goes more of the lower-paying jobs. So it's a vicious cycle we have to break out of.
Okay. Let's go to Daniel right now. Daniel, I understand you're the retired past president of Fresno City College?
Oh, yes. Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Several comments, if I may.
Go right ahead.
I'll take whatever you want to, how you want to address this off the air. I think you've addressed it to some degree. It's a societal issue, whether it's here or nationwide. The school skills, that needs to be addressed at K through 12. I grew up in Fresno. I went to Chester Rowell through Yosemite Junior High and Roosevelt, and we had all kinds of various vocational programs we could choose from, and I wasn't good at any of them. So therefore, you know, I had to go into something else. Luis said it all when he said there has to be coordination because of limited resources. I think that's very, very important. The fact that we're blaming the recession for this, I came back to Fresno in 1997 after being gone 27 years, and the unemployment rate was huge.
Yeah,
then. And
as we mentioned, this is
ag,
right.
Graduated
this has been
from Fresno State, and I had to leave Fresno to get a job back in 1970. So, you know, I think the Brookings Institute data is great, and I think the Workforce Investment Board does some wonderful things, but I think all those things between the community colleges need to be coordinated. And I did not do a very good job of coordinating the ones that we had when I was at Fresno City College. So I'll take my answer off the air, and Luis does a great job with Reading and Beyond, and I think by learning to read by third grade is something that we need to do, and we need to quit teaching to the test. So thank you so
I
much.
I think
for
so many teachers
this
will.
Show and for
thank
your
you
guests.
For that.
I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate you too. Well, thank you.
I absolutely agree with him that we definitely need to start coordinating our deliverables.
Right. And I think that's something that they've all pointed out. Unfortunately, we're going to have to end this discussion now. It can be an ongoing discussion because we have so much to talk about here. But we will be back in just a moment. I'm Juanita Stevenson, and you're listening to Valley Edition.
Support for Valley Edition comes from Chevron.
and Avicennia Wellness Center online at avecinia.com.
Well, in entertainment, we all know that Fresno has its Mike Oz, and Bakersfield has Matt Munoz. He is the entertainment writer with the Bakersfield, California, and he joins us right now. Matt, how are you this morning?
I'm great, Juanita. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, one thing that I think we have all noticed in the Central Valley, especially those of us who grew up here, is that the Central Valley has really become an entertainment hub.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. You know, like Fresno, our locations in the Central Valley kind of, they lend itself to being these kind of oases in the middle of the Central Valley between these, you know, larger cities, Los Angeles and San Francisco, et cetera. And so the communities here really do a really good job of cultivating, you know, arts and entertainment and so many things to do where you don't have to leave your hometown. You can stay right here, and there's theater, art, music, everything at your fingertips. Great parks, of course, the river, et cetera.
Yeah, matter of fact, I know whenever I go to visit or to hang out at one of the rivers or the lakes, I meet more people from L.A. than I do from the region. So, I mean, we really are a draw.
True. It's an escape. It's a nice little escape from all the hubbub. I know a lot of people that I've been running into more people as I've been during my career as a journalist, that people who work in Los Angeles, but they love living here or just visiting.
Okay. Well, yeah. I understand that you had a great opportunity tonight in Bakersfield. Santana is playing, and you had the opportunity to speak with him. What was that like for you?
That was great. And, you know, I've been, as a journalist, as a music journalist, and also as a Latino music journalist, scoring the interview with Carlos Santana is one of those things that you hope is going to happen sometime at the point of your, you know, at some point of your career. So when I got the opportunity to sit down and talk with him, he gave me, you know, a great 30 minutes. We talked about everything from, you know, from him growing up in Tijuana to being Woodstock, being a teenager, working with Bill Graham, his career, just rise through the 60s and the 70s, and then just kind of go through kind of a lull in the 80s, and then just that rebirth in the 90s with the Supernatural record. And, you know, he's been inducted in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he's newly married to Cindy Blackman, one a phenomenal drummer who's known for playing with Lenny Kravitz over the years. And he just opened up about a lot of things. And one of the things he mentioned was that, you know, I'm a new man now. You know, he had the Carlos Santana of old, and he's a Carlos Santana of new.
Well, you know, that's the way you do it in the industry. You just come back around again.
Absolutely, absolutely, yeah. And he speaks like he's 20 years old, or he's a teenager, and he just walked off the stage at Woodstock. Such a colorful, you know, speaker when I was talking with him. And he's going to be here tonight, and it's great because he hasn't been back in Bakersfield. I did the math, and I went onto the Santana.com website. He hasn't been here since 1989.
Wow.
So it's been about 22 years, and I saw him at the Great Kern County Fair. It was actually the opening night of the Kern County Fair in 1989. So it's kind of weird. It's almost the 22nd anniversary of that performance.
And speaking of the Kern County Fair, it's just like here we're almost ready to start our big Fresno Fair. But mm-hmm. the Kern County Fair is about to open as well, and you have a lot of good entertainment coming through for that.
Oh, absolutely, yes. Tonight we've got a kind of country rap artist, Uncle Cracker, is going to be there tonight. On Friday, September 29th, we have Leon Russell, the great Leon Russell, new Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, who's, you know, recorded with the Rolling Stones and just written, you know, This Masquerade, just so many hits. The fair's going on. It starts every day. It's going on from noon till closing at 10, but there's a lot of great free entertainment at the Budweiser Pavilion. All those concerts start at 8 o'clock. So they're free with paid admission. Last night, Salt and Pepper was just on there, you know, doing the hip-hop 80s style. So we got Leon Russell. We got Kelly Pickler this Saturday. And just a variety of a lot of free entertainment because there are multiple stages at the Kern County Fair. That's what's great about it. So if you're not into Leon Russell, I'm sure you can walk over about another 100 feet and you're going to see some cloggers over there or the Hypnotist or some other fun stuff. Dance and Animals, they have a lot of animals and kind of fun stuff.
And you also interviewed Kelly Pickler. I mean, you think back from her appearance on American Idol, and she's been one of those, people who has been able to make her own career.
Yeah, she's one of the few, and I think a lot of people they might forget, but she was the sixth place finalist that particular season, and she's become one of the most popular artists out of that. A lot of the artists, what they do is they usually just kind of ride that newfound fame as far as they can go. And then they might disappear, or they might kind of go back into the lab and want to kind of reinvent themselves, because one of the things that Kelly Pickler, when we had this interview, was that she said, American Idol will almost make you an artist, out of thin air, She said, one day I was a Sonic car hop waitress in North Carolina, and the next thing you know, I'm in everybody's living room. Nobody cared about me one day, and the next thing, I'm all over the place. But she says now, after she's already released two full-length albums, she's going to start. She'd really like to go back and kind of go back to the roots. She wants to go to the Nashville, kind of honky tonks and do all that. I don't know how easy it's going to be for her to do that, because after all, she is Kelly Pickler. But that's one of the things that she'd like to do. She's like, I want to do what Tammy Wynette did and all this, and hopefully she has a little bit easier life than Tammy Wynette, But she was just another great artist to talk to. So young, you think
she,
about
she really
when she
is
started,
very
she was only 19
young.
Years old.
So when can we catch your weekly column in the Bakersfield Californian?
Every Thursday. In every Thursday edition, I have the Lowdown with Matt Munoz, and have a few other stories in there. Once again, you can see the Kelly Pickler interview and a preview of the third annual Bakersfield Oktoberfest happening here that weekend. And, of course, all the fair previews, and we try to keep everybody in the loop, so everybody in the Central Valley, just pick up a copy of the Bakersfield Californian or visit us on bakersfield.com.
Okay. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure speaking with you this morning.
You're very welcome, Juanita.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that is all for today's Valley Edition. You can hear audio archives and subscribe to our podcast online at kbpr.org. We welcome your comments and suggestions, and you can email us at talk@kbpr.org. For audio engineer Marv Allen, producer Tracy Sharman, production and operations manager Don Weaver, and executive producer Joe Moore, I'm Juanita Stevenson. This is Valley Edition on Valley Public Radio.
Support for Valley Edition comes from the James Irvine Foundation and Kaiser Permanente.